We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What is going on, Roto-Grinders? Dean here. It's Dean7804. If you want to go a little technical on me in the DFS circles, this once again is the NFL Pick 6 show. Two of the best minds in all of DFS and all of NFL. We're going to back every single week. Batting first, leading off. You know him from Roto World. It's John Daigle. John, how are things in your world? How's hump day treating you?
Everything's going well here. Last week, I will say, I entered the afternoon, only two games, by the way, with DeAndre Swift, Derrick Henry, and Trey Burton, but it still doesn't work out when you stack the Packers and watch them just crumble underneath the Bucs defense. So almost there last week, almost.
You at least had hope. My week went, it did not go well for your boy, but it's DFS. All we care about is today. Forget about last week. The score goes back to zero. It was not a positive week for me, but you know, get yourself up, dust yourself off, and you know, take on week 7. I love this week 7, by the way. I'm looking forward to talking about it. And as far as deciding in the three games we focus on, I'm sure that was pretty tricky because there's more than three games that have my interest. Also, what I bring in, of course, you guys know I'm from Sharp Football Analysis, the worksheet. Rich Rebar. Rich, how about yourself? Was last week good for you? Kind of somewhere in the middle?
It was like a break even. Nothing big. Derrick Henry and cash went under Derrick Henry in tournaments. So you know how that went. So fall on the sword there. But, you know, it worked out 1 week when he played the Jaguars. It did not work out last week. But we move on to week 7, try to win. We're still chasing some big money here, though. But this slate, like you hit on, is fantastic, at least on paper. Whereas last week we kind of meandered through thinking like, well, what do we really want to do here? There are too many plays on this slate.
Yeah, it is worth noting. Obviously, we focus just on the main slate here. So we're not going to talk about the Colts who run by. Baltimore's on bye, Minnesota's on bye, the Dolphins are on bye. Oh, RIP Fitzpatrick. That was so sad watching him talking about how much he loved playing. Maybe he'll get traded. We'll see. Dallas, possibly. Who knows? I'm sure it's been floated out there by many people. But, you know, there's some people out there that think that Fitzpatrick's like a top 10, top 15, like real-life quarterback in the year 2020, which is an interesting take. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about DFS. Week 7, only the main slate. Thursday night, we're throwing that out. No Giants, no Philly, no Bucks, no Raiders, no Bears and Rams on Monday night. On this show, of course, we focus on three main games, 6 teams total. And hey, we got the chat up there on YouTube. What's up, YouTube? Feel free to like and subscribe. We do appreciate that. We're also live, you guys are not aware. Oh, we have, you know, videos all throughout the week, all throughout the every single day. There's going to be something up here on the RG page. But Sunday, for 3 hours, we go live all the way up, leading with the locks. That's good times as well. All right, let's talk about the first game on tap. And look, this is the thing, Daigle. It's not how watchable it is. It's not if it's great football necessarily, but from a DFS perspective, Detroit versus Atlanta. That's one of the games that's popping, 55.5 as far as the total. Detroit's a 3-point dog here. It's high and it's tight. Atlanta got their first W last week. Julio erupted last week. Detroit, you know, ravaged the Jags. We didn't exactly get the fantasy points. Well, some of us did if you were, you know, betting on the come as far as Swift. This game, how are we attacking it? It's high, it's tight, it's in a dome. It's beautiful, right?
It is beautiful, and this is the theme of this week. Not only one of the key matchups we'll be getting exposure towards, but also flop lag, because now we suddenly find ourselves trying to leverage the Lions' passing game, I would assume, off of DeAndre Swift. I think, honestly, that was probably the game plan for the Lions last week, was to go in attacking the Jaguars' front seven. Because even in the 16 plays that they ran during neutral game script, it was only 4 passes to 12 runs on the ground. And then we would saw what happened. They get inside the 10-yard line. They give DeAndre Swift 3 carries inside the 5. They give Adrian Peterson a carry on the goal line as well. So it looked like they were trying to ram the ball down the Jaguars' throats. But you can't really do that against the Falcons, believe it or not. They've allowed 3.6 yards per carry to opposing running backs and just 2 touchdowns all year long, whereas Atlanta's secondary is exactly where we want to attack because they have allowed nearly 50 more fantasy points than the next closest defense through the air. So I know people do not have faith in the Lions' passing attack right now, but Stafford is still fresh off a season high and balls thrown 20-plus yards downfield. He's over 10 air yards per attempt the past 2 weeks if you sandwich together that game before the bye as well. So I think Stafford and the passing attack, like you've seen the jar on the lid slowly coming up, trying to get pressure and emerge. And I think that's finally what happens this week.
Your thoughts there, Rebo? Are you on board with the passing game?
Yeah, like, you know, it's interesting is I was down on Stafford this year coming into the season because, you know, everyone was citing his 8 games that he played last year and, you know, how gaudy his stats were, not even thinking about, like, you know, how it was one half a season sample and that he had the 5th easiest schedule in the league through that point, and then they had the 29th harder schedule. So he dodged all, like, the hard games, and then he set career highs in yards per attempt and touch rate. No one cared about any of that and, like, was looking at it, like, under a microscope. And it's kind of played out. A regression has happened for him, you know, throughout the season. I mean, he's 19th in yards per pass attempt right now. He's 17th in touchdown rate. So all that regression has come to play. And then the volume has just fallen off a cliff. He's thrown 33 or fewer passes in every game since week one. He's thrown exactly 31 passes the last 3 games. But this is a spot to kind of highlight going back to him. And I think maybe last week it was, you know, where he was a guy that was, we were circling around a little bit because the Jags were so bad, but, you know, also it was, we were, you know, kind of cognizant of, hey, the Jags needed to one, do their part, and that two, the Jags are so bad against the run that, you know, the Lions could, you know, theoretically just lean on the run and be boring. And that's kind of what happened, you know, even without, they scored 4 touchdowns and 3 were rushing. So, I mean, that's typically the type of split you don't see. Typically it's like 65-35 to the pass. But, you know, Stafford's only threw for 223 yards. He didn't have to throw it. This week, we'll get some pushback from the Falcons because if you look at Matt Ryan, you know, everyone will highlight the on-off splits with Julio when you really just have to look at the defenses the Falcons have faced too. You know, in Matt Ryan's games that he's popped, he's been a QB8 or higher in all 3 games Julio Jones played, but also played this Seahawks, the Cowboys, and the Vikings, those games too. So it was a both world, a best of both worlds, having his second best wide receiver on the field and having great matchups. But they're going to fight back and they're going to throw the ball in this game as well, and they're going to score points. So we won't have a situation where the Jaguars are just trying to get junk points at the end of the game to kind of nurse Stafford's line along. We'll see the Lions have to throw the football, you know, in this game. So it's really easy too when you look at this game to kind of figure out the pieces you want to play. I mean, the Falcons are as easy as it gets. I mean, they've got Matt Ryan, they've got Julio Jones, they've got Calvin Ridley. The rest of these guys, like, we don't really care about. They're all kind of ancillary jabronis. You know, Hayden Hurst got gift box. They walk in 35-yard touchdown at the end of last week's game. But the only guys we care about are those 2 big dogs. And you can play, if you want to play that side, you can play both with Ryan, and you can just run Galladay back. Or you can get cute and try to run Swift back. Because, well, the interesting thing, like Daigle said, people are going to walk into this backwards, the Swift thing, because the signal – it should be that where it's not even like you should go in on Swift's rushing share in this game and play him as a lead back, even though he had 14 carries after having 12 all season long, because teams have not run successfully on the Falcons. And if you played Alexander Mattison last week, you found that out before even game script got involved. So DeAndre Swift, people are going to want to play him for his rushing spike, but the Falcons have allowed the most receiving points to opposing running backs all season long, which is DeAndre Swift's main role in this offense, and still was last week when Adrian Peterson still played the 3rd highest snap share he's played all season. So this is going to get Adrian Peterson off the field probably potentially even more. So people will probably walk into this backwards at Swift too and run to another spot where they're not reading the signal the correct way. And I think people will look at Hockenson, but man, Hockenson for me is tough. I think tournaments only, he's just not really involved. 16th in receptions per game at tight ends, 20th in targets per game. If he doesn't score a touchdown, like, he's really not getting there. The Falcons are a matchup we've highlighted all year. But Hockenson is just not stacking the targets and yards we really want to latch onto for a guy that has really had even a high to potentially have a high ceiling.
The sites have saved me from Hockenson because they keep pricing him as if he'll emerge every single week. And the fact is he's just not doing it. And so you're not, if he hits his floor, which he's done in every game, he's just not getting there because his price isn't even low. So that's my continued issue with rostering Hockenson in DFS.
I got a couple things. I know there's some noise in a lot of stats, especially like in defense versus position, but yeah, Atlanta has yielded the second most DK points. I'm pulling up the, it's a free tool here at RotoGrinders. You guys can check it out yourself. Tight ends versus Atlanta getting 21.13 fantasy points per game. Atlanta's just been a sieve versus everybody, to be fair. Well, like you said, running backs have been, have had some issues. And that's kind of worth talking about. That's another thing I want to ask. And I'm curious to get your guys' general take as far as this, because DVOA is something that people throw out there. It's a very accessible stat, but it's a catch-all stat, and it can be noisy as well, too. And Zagel, how much do we care about that? Because like you guys are talking about, the DVOA for Atlanta, they're 8th against the run, they're 30th against the pass. How much do you trust DVOA? It's a kind of a cheat code, and there's something to it, but there's obviously more to dig into.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely trust DVOA, and I believe Football Outsiders, don't they start mixing in schedule? So basically they get rid of Dave around week 6. So it was this week, I think. I could be misquoting that. But either way, yeah, I typically look at DVOA, but as with all football stats, it's all just one giant piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And there's so many pieces of that puzzle, which is why I've always have bags under my eyes by week 7, because I'm already drained and trying to find the energy somewhere while Silva slides wine across the table to me. So yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's all a bunch of pieces of puzzles. I'm assuming you're asking that because also Rich is correct. Todd Gurley is definitely an ancillary jabroni, as we like to cite on the show. Having said that, 9 targets in his past 2 games, has run a season high in routes on Ryan's dropbacks and back-to-back contests now, so a slight role change for him in that span. Having said that, still pretty disastrous on the ground, and the only tournament I've seen him in all year that he's actually helped take down was, of course, against the Panthers, and that's who we play everyone against. So I'm still off of him in this matchup as well. And also, I know he did receive, I think it was 23 touches, 20 carries last week. Mm-hmm. But, like, the Falcons' offense, it's fun now because with their offense fully healthy, they've already experienced 3 blown losses, essentially. Like, they don't have a choice now, but they have to keep their foot on the gas with big leads, which is why I think they kept on throwing last week as well. So if that's the case here and they somehow build a lead over the Falcons, which I don't think so, because I actually like the Lions outright. We know the Falcons will likely keep their foot on the gas and throwing the ball because they don't want to cede another 2 or 3 score deficit whenever they lead by that much.
Yeah. So everybody, your thoughts as far as the running game, like Gurley, he had 20 touches or 20 rushes last week for 47 yards, obviously not efficient. Game script suggests that he was going to get the ball a ton as well too. They had that big lead and he had several catches as well. But like, and Detroit is a team you can run against, again, yielding the DVOA, their 30th. And I also wanted to mention, as far as the snap count, you guys talking about Peterson and Swift. You know, Peterson 35%, Swift last week at 38%. Basically what it's been the entire season, more or less. We were talking about how, you know, off the bye, it might go up higher. And in theory, you know, he's the running back of the future. Why not get him some more touches, get him some more looks? Is it too murky right now? A GPP darts for sure. What are we doing as far as the running backs here, Rebar?
Well, like I said, I think you need to look at the way the Falcons get points the back, because I think it actually favors Swift's role in general. And then if he's going to keep getting, you know, a couple more carries, you know, here and there, get involved in that and push double digit carries. Cause that was always a big rub. He was getting 4 carries a game. you know, that you can't do anything with that. Even as any running back, you know, you're not going to give a running back 4 carries and hope he gets 10 yards a carry, to do something tangible. It's just not, you know, realistic. I kind of blew over Gurley. I mean, it's definitely a spot when you look at Gurley, because he did hit in the Panther spot, which is kind of a very similar spot, you know, here at home, against a defense that is similarly as bad as Carolina's against the run. You know, I just look at Todd Gurley as a guy that I typically don't like to play just because he's so touchdown dependent. I mean, you look at his 2 games without a touchdown this year, he's at 6.1 and 9.7 PPR points. I like my guys to have a little more higher floor without a touchdown. So then when the touchdowns do come, it means it's going to be, they're going to go bonkers, instead of needing a touchdown to just be good. But he did hit in that Carolina spot, which I think, you know, does give him a little more promise. You know, I kind of blew over them. I will say this for a Todd Gurley game, this is objectively probably as good as it looks.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what you're putting in the back of the box, and you're not necessarily buying the DVD anyway because you don't want to buy Todd Gurley. And I'm saying in the chat, I refuse to play Todd Gurley. Nobody wants to play Todd Gurley, and I don't either. To make it clear, I was not trying to sell Todd.
I feel pretty similarly.
Yeah, we can all agree with that. I wonder if Calvin Ridley will go overlooked though, because he's still been the wide receiver 1, 2, and 10, and the three healthy games Julio Jones has started and played this year. So, like, Calvin Ridley is still a wide receiver 1 if Julio Jones pops. So I do wonder, like, how – if he'll go overlooked at all in this slate.
And in the last three games the Lions have played, they've allowed two opposing wide receivers to go in double-digit PPR points. So both guys are getting there. We had Hopkins and Isabella, three games ago, because remember they had a bye mix in. And then Emmanuel Sanders and Traquan Smith both went off. And then Keelan Cole – last week, then Shark barely got over there, but he had 14 targets and like a gazillion air yards. Wow, that game was rough. I mean, listen, we talked about the match with Minshew, and we talked about when I was on Ahulka about the man zone splits with Minshew, and they came to fruition. I mean, he struggled in that game.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the easy. I mean, look, we like Rebar. I'm sure you like Galladay. Well, what's to say? Galladay's a really solid play here against Atlanta, but. Here's the tricky question. Is Marvin Jones dust? Is he dust? I know he's questionable. He's dealing with he just popped up on the injury list today with a knee. Assuming he's going to play, who knows? We shall see. We're recording this. If you guys will watch this later on in the week, we're recording this on a Wednesday night. So if we say something that information changes, the week is fluid. And I looked at some ownership stuff or just kind of like projections. And if I reference something, it's from Wednesday night. So understand that's how the NFL week goes. It is fluid. Things are changing, especially this season. Rebar, assuming Jones is in, look, in DFS, we live in the world of salary cap, and you're supposed to, like, buy the players when they're at their floor. Everybody is worth a roster spot when they're theoretically cheap enough to justify it. I don't know how cheap Marvin Jones has to be, but, like, 4.4K on DK historically is crazy cheap, but, like, he's been horrific this year. Is there any reason to be, like, have any kind of promise that he won't be horrific this week?
Marvin Jones is living in the basement with Silva. He's not even at his floor. He's gone below.
Is that it? Is it over?
Listen, I came for him last week. So, I mean, someone else is going to have to, you know, pick me off the ground and carry me. The Falcons have allowed a league high 29 completions of 20 plus yards. That's all I've got. Like, I came for Jones last week. Someone's going to have to come and carry the torch for me this week.
I mean, so that's your play if you're not playing Swift, right? Because you want to play Galladay. So if you're looking for another player that would potentially outscore Swift in these stacks that may go Stafford, Galladay, and Swift, you, of course, would have to go Marvin Jones. Just like Brandon Cooks, he's still out there running routes. 95% of the running routes on Stafford's dropbacks this year. The issue is that since Galladay's returned, he has a 10% target share. Whereas in the first two games, he had a 20% target share. So he's just not getting looks. So just like Swift last week, you're basically just hoping for a change in the offensive game plan. There is a little bit of squeaky wheel out there. OC Daryl Bevel came out and said that he understands the importance of keeping Marvin Jones involved. This assumes that Marvin Jones practiced and comes back on Sunday. But I would be more than happy in tournaments if you were stacking the Lions going Galladay and Marvin Jones for sure, because Rich is totally right. People are absolutely going to backdoor DeAndre Swift's fantasy points. No doubt about it. But I think Marvin Jones is a good way to leverage off of Swift.
Yeah, that's how you win tournaments these days. You know, I imagine that I don't know what people are going to have as far as Swift, because people are going to be looking at the fact that he wasn't going to was on the field a lot. Obviously, he was spectacular when he was out there. Good touchdown variance, and he broke off a pretty long one as well too. But I don't know. I'm curious, because I was running some stuff pre-show as far as at least the quote unquote optimal lineup, but I don't really think he was popping in much. But, you know, some people like to chase as well, too. But also, it's a sharper field. People understand that not necessarily what happened last week is going to happen this week. And I'm scrolling. I ran 190 lineups, quote-unquote optimal lineups, with 10% variance added. And he's in zero of them, for what it's worth.
Interesting.
Yeah, on DK.
And I'll also say, like, we're about to move on here. There are a lot of plays this week. There are.
Yeah.
So many plays this week. Like, I got anxiety building lineups this week because I was like, I can't even fit all these guys in. So.
You guys got anything else as far as this game? It sounds like you're done, Daigle. Anything else, Rebar?
No, I think we covered mostly everything here.
All right, another game in the Dome, Carolina, New Orleans. New Orleans, 51 as far as the total. They're about an 8-point favorite as of this point. I just saw a note that they're going to allow like 3,000 fans in the Dome. So historically a tough place to play. I don't know how much noise that 3,000 people can make, but sure, there you go. Just kind of saw it before the show. And so how much does Michael Thomas coming back hurt Kamara? And how much is it, are we assuming Michael Thomas is good to go? He was supposedly probably going to play last week if he didn't punch his teammate. So I imagine he's 100% and good to go. They say there's no more disciplinary stuff as well. So Michael Thomas and Kamara, the two studs in New Orleans. Daigle, you lead it off for us.
So can you fit both in a lineup? Would you play both with Breeze in this game? And then who would you run it back with, since the Panthers have a ton of options? These are the questions I keep going back to. And I would imagine, you can look it up on your end, Dean. I would imagine that it is Kamara, clearly, who is still going to be, I'm going to guess, 20% more rostered than Michael Thomas. And that would lead me to want to play Thomas, because I think he comes back with aplomb. Like, nothing stopping him. I was looking to play him before the bye, before he either got hurt again or punched. I don't know what happened. But either way, I wanted to play him before the bye. And so now, after an extended rest, I'm looking to immediately get him back out there in what is a terrific matchup, and one that may go down as controversial for this show, because I actually chose it over Packers and Houston because I love it so much.
Yeah, on the fly, I pulled it up. Right now, 8% Michael Thomas. And that's 7.6. And this is optimal lineups as of Wednesday night, a little bit of variance added to it, and, you know, salary cap reasons. And 7.6K, by the way, this is DK specific as well. I don't know when the last time we saw Michael Thomas at 7.6. That feels like a discount for sure. And Kamara is still probably too cheap. But again, just 10% he's popping up in, because we keep alluding to it. It's a really, really good slate. There's a lot of good plays. You can only roster one. Who do you have for me, Rebar?
Yeah, it's the Panthers and running backs, though. It's so hard. It's so hard for me to get away from it. So what Carolina has done this year is they're not a great defense, but like, we thought they'd be like, the worst defense in the NFL. They're the youngest average age per starter in the league. But they've just dropped back and decided, hey, we can't rush the passer. We're barely going to try to rush the passer, but they're just dropping back in zone, and they're not giving up like any passing production, like almost hardly any passing production. They are 31st in pressure rate in the NFL, but they have a lot of league low 6.1 yards per pass attempt and a league low 9.1 yards per pass completion, which is crazy. There's dropping back, playing shell coverage, and making people throw and coming up and making tackles. Now, that is conducive to Michael Thomas. Definitely if they're going to get a bunch of dropbacks and just going to drop back in zone, that's what Michael Thomas does. He'll be running them slants. He'll be running them curls. He was limited in practice with a hamstring injury today, which is interesting, because he hasn't done anything except for punch teammates. So, I mean, I don't know if he hurt his hamstring punching a teammate, but something to keep an eye on too, as well, with him coming back. It seems like everything, this is something keeps happening for the Michael Thomas return. But we know we still want to play running backs against Carolina, man. It's just tried and true. They can't stop the run. The Bears' offensive line tried to make that as interesting as possible last week with David Montgomery. He still had almost 100 total yards from scrimmage in that game. So, like, if transitive property is 96 yards for David Montgomery, I'm going to assume it's like 345 yards for Alvin Kamara. So, no. But, some of his rate stats have to come down. So, he has 30% of the New Orleans receptions. The next closest running back in reception share is Mike Davis. I'm sorry, at 21%. So like, there just has to be some of his gaudy like usage stats have to come down. But the matchup is beautiful. He still has 17 to 22 touches in every game. I think that's a 17 touch areas against Carolina is gonna probably get you your price tag in this one. I'm not going to talk myself off any running back versus Carolina, but I mean, like I said, the Panthers' approach to defense this year has been intriguing to say the least, but they have allowed at least 7 receptions to 4 wide receiver ones they have faced this season, if you're looking for like a reception floor to build off of.
Just like getting off DeAndre Swift for the Lions passing game, it is this game. Like, first of all, how do you get off Kamara? And then if you do, you clearly have to do it with Michael Thomas. But then also, we're in that choice. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but we're in that choice with the Packers as well. Like, how do you get off Aaron Rodgers, against a team that just let Derrick Henry do whatever he wanted and then get on that passing game. But you can't do it with every team this week. It is just this is one of the puzzle pieces of this slate that makes it so interesting, because there are so many ways to go to try and get an edge over the field.
Yeah, so one of my approaches last week was I thought, like, maybe I have one Minnesota Viking in every single team. Like, I felt they're going to score a bunch of points, and you know it's going to be, if not this guy, it's going to be that guy. Of course, that didn't work out, unless you had Jefferson. But maybe you play Kamara or Thomas on, like, you know, one of them, at least one of them on every team. Just, you know, of course, they both can go off as well, too, but they're going to score 30 points. I feel fairly confident that one of them is going to have a pretty big game. As far as Breeze, like, I had this personal hang-up against quarterbacks that don't have legs. I know last week we finally saw it with Matt Ryan. He's, you know, there's other ways to getting there. You can just throw for 400 yards and four touchdowns, and that's another way of getting there. But then, you know, Breeze has not been spectacular this year. He has no legs at all. And also, he gets booted off the field plenty of times, especially inside the, you know, goal line, 10, 20, you know, and, you know, good spots to be on the field with Hill coming in, and he gets his touchdown siphoned. I will say it's kind of sort of baked in, though, because we haven't seen this in a long time, I feel. Breeze is like the 15th most expensive quarterback, and he used to be a guy that was like perennially top five, top six, top seven as far as price. So, yeah, sure, he's interesting. You guys mentioned Breeze. Is anybody excited about playing Breeze? Like, it's fine. I'm not excited, though. Should I be excited?
Doesn't he project to be chalk right now? Like, isn't his ownership quite high?
I can pull that up.
Yes, please.
Again, not the ownership again. I can just pull up what we have as far as the optimal lineups, which, you know, there is some correlation to that. Deshaun Watson, 51%, and then Kyler Murray.
Yeah, 35%. I would be surprised with this, the game we still have left, the quarterbacks in that game, then the Watson, Rodgers, and then we got Ryan still, I think, will be popular. I would be surprised. I would be surprised if he's real popular, because he hasn't been good either. I mean, he hasn't been that strong either.
Yeah, go ahead.
No. I was gonna flip it really quick, because I was gonna say I do like the other side of the ball for the price, because that's how you get Kamara and Thomas in a good run back spot, because Teddy Bridgewater is in a absolute eruption spot here. And what I love is the flop lag, since he was in a disastrous game last week against the Bears that we thought he would likely fail in. And now he's in a spot that the Saints deep secondary has allowed 13 touchdowns to one pick over the last four games. And everyone says, oh, like Marshawn Lattimore, Janoris Jenkins weren't available. Okay, well, Lattimore was in three of those four games, and Derek Carr and Aaron Rodgers went over 8 yards per attempt, and Justin Herbert flipped the field every time he threw the ball for four touchdowns. And now Bridgewater's in that spot with Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore, who are also coming off somewhat disappointing games. And they're all cheap now as well, because the Saints defense is still getting far too much credit, both in betting markets and DFS. So, like, I just love a stack here with both wide receivers. Bridgewater's only 5,800 on DraftKings, and then you can decide what to do with Thomas and Kamara.
Your thoughts, Rebar?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Saints defense, they've been awful the entire season. Marshawn Lattimore, when he's played, has been bad. Even when he's been on the field, he's been giving up receptions left and right to players so far this season. And, you know, last year he didn't play. I mean, yeah, so he's allowed, 15 of 19 targets to be completed in his coverage so far for 254 yards and three touchdowns. So it's not like he's out here like Darrell Revis, and he's a guy we need to really be, like, discounting, you know, players for as well. And especially in tournament games anyways at that, because, you know, we're probably not going to circle a lot of these guys. Guys are going to jam in and cash. Although they've been reliable guys. I mean, Robbie Anderson, his worst game of the season, and he's had four catches for 77 yards. He's just had such a high floor, and he only has one touchdown on the year. You know, he's kind of like the, you know, DJ Moore from last year. He's getting all these catches and yards, and we can't get him in the box. DJ Moore, on the flip side, has really started to get just like a ton. He's back, like the targets have started to find him again the past 2 weeks. You know, last week he had a season high 38% of the team targets. He had a ton of deep targets. He put some balls on the ground, but, like, who cares about that? Mm-hmm. And the one, like, the last play of the game, like Bridgewater, you can't miss that throw. And, you know, last time he played the Saints, he had, you know, 126 and two touchdowns in that game. I mean, Lattimore didn't play. You can point to that. But, I mean, we know where the ball goes here. It goes to these two guys and Mike Davis. Like, it's really easy to understand. If we run around a stack with the Panthers, you know, we can. We can stack these guys. We can put both together. Every quarterback has hit against the Saints so far. They've allowed 20 or more fantasy points to every guy they faced. So you've got something to build off of there. Teddy's been running a little bit more, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
This year, so he has been using his legs a little bit. Though two of the past weeks he's rushed for 32 yards and a touchdown, 48 yards last week. So yeah, I mean, I mean, I think the Panther side is really intriguing. I believe that they will probably go overlooked just because there's so much other sex on the slate that people are going to want to look to play a lot of other guys, whereas these guys have just been kind of out here getting targets every week, getting air yards every week, and being productive, but they're just going to kind of fly by this week just because there are a lot of other games people are going to want to circle other than this one, I think.
And that's the question for me, as we ask every week, can Bridgewater match Kyler, Russ, Rodgers, Watson? I genuinely think he can, but I also have different spins on those games than others. So I like that offense as a whole this week.
I just want to clarify, but before I was talking about Deshaun Watson being 51%, that's an optimal lineup. He's clearly not going to be 51% in lineups, just so people understand. I see people talking about in the chat. Also in the chat, they're asking about Lattimore. Is he a shutdown corner still? Is he somebody we're afraid of? And if we are to some degree, and like I always think the quarterback receiver stuff is probably a little too noisy. You try to overreact to it too much, especially when it comes to tournaments. Who would he be guarding? Is there somebody that he would be locking on, or just kind of would rotate throughout the game?
So Panthers, this is a Joe Brady thing. They treat their receivers as tertiary players. They literally move them all across the field. Mm-hmm. They teach their players to be receivers, not to be X, Y, and Z receivers, which is why Joe Brady is a coach next year as well. Also, you know, two things when you turn to the Pick Six show. One, we're not going to talk about wine that hasn't been placed in the fridge already. And two, we don't care about the cornerback matchups, really. So... Just to be honest with you. And also Lattimore, still obviously a tremendous player, but 15 catches allowed on 19 targets this year. Not too worried about him. I understand the Saints defense has a history of doing this, starting out very slow, and they still have Davenport, they still have Lattimore, they still have talent in that unit, but so far they have shown below nothing. They have been abysmal, and so that's why I still want to continue attacking them in this moment.
Arimar, what do you have for me as far as Mike Davis, his worst game last time out, kind of got bailed out by a touchdown. His game still wasn't good, but like he salvaged, I suppose. Not a ton of touches. Well, actually, you know, 18 rushes.
Still, yep. Yeah. 20 touches still.
I guess we've been spoiled by the 26 and 20, whatever it is. But the price went down, you know, sure. I'd imagine it's still going to be fine. And we're working the assumption again that CMC is going to be out. I assume he's going to be out another week. We shall see. Your thoughts as far as Davis?
Yeah, I mean, the touches are still here. I mean, we got spoiled on the receptions, and the receptions evaporated because that's where he was making his money. I mean, he wasn't a guy coming out and rushing for 120 yards. We were getting the dual usage from him, and then you're stacking the reception points, obviously, on a site like DK, and that's what was getting him over. We lost the catches last week, which is what did us in. We had the 20 touches, but, he's rushed for – he had the one good game. He hasn't rushed for 100 yards yet in any of the games, right? He's 89 was his high, something like that. And then he's getting the dual. So that's what hurt us last week with Mike Davis. But the Saints are another team that are tough to run on. I mean, another one of these matchups. I mean, 3.6 yards per carry to running backs. That's sixth in the NFL. I've been talking about the Samaje Perine stats for about 3 years in the show. It's still holding steady. We're still holding steady. So we just need those receptions to come back and find him. They're middle of the pack, the Saints, in receptions allowed to wide receivers, receiving points. So if those receptions come back, then he's still a guy to kind of go back and circle to, because people probably won't be on him after, you know, he ran into that Bears defense last week. The Bears are they shut passing games down. The Bears haven't allowed more than one passing touchdown a game this season, and they haven't allowed more than two passing touchdowns now in 32 straight games. It's just one of these things, man. Like, they just mush quarterback production, and the Bears play awfully slow and terrible on offense. They get you into these terrible games that ruin everybody, and that's kind of what happened in that game last week. Whereas the Saints are the opposite. The Saints will, kind of force some scoring. Even the Saints haven't even played really good this year, and they're still, scoring points and forcing them. They're averaging 30 points per game. And like, I feel like we haven't even seen the Saints offense play good. I feel like everyone's talking about how bad Breeze has been all season long. You know, it's kind of been the narrative, and they're averaging 31 points per game.
Yeah. He had one of those national TV games where he had sort of a noodle arm. And I think it kind of accentuates that
in a game they couldn't get off the field against Derek Carr. Like, once again, the narrative, the Breeze's arm was masking the narrative that the Saints defense couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah, fair enough.
Benny Snell, Bob Tonyan, Drew Brees, Tom Brady. Island games have been treated players unfairly this year.
Well, that's how it is, though. And if you're great, you're raised up probably too much as well. Also, it just kind of goes both ways. Going to talk Seattle, Arizona in a second. I do want to mention the Roto-Grinders The FanDuel single entry series, it went well last week. Well, not for me, not for your boy. I donated. Whoever won, congratulations. Thankfully, you know, it only gives it's a regular single entry contest at three different levels, $5, $33, and $100. I love playing in single entry contests. I will be back this week. Hopefully I will cash or at least not be completely miserable and in the bottom 10%, whatever it was. It was a disaster. Did not go well for your boy, unfortunately. But, yeah, so how that works is there's added value. The top four scores from now to week 13, obviously if you play every single week, you're better chance of accumulating four tops, you know, four really, really strong scores at each level. You advance to a contest that offers $20,000 at the end of the year, I think week 14, week 15, something like that, when it's all said and done after week 13. But again, I'm playing these contests anyway. It's a good contest, one of the best contests out there in all of DFS, and there's added value, different buy-in tierings as well, $5, $33, $100. Hopefully we'll make it happen this week. We'll go ahead and check out. There's probably going to be a link dropped in chat if you guys are not aware of how that works. The Roto-Grinders FanDuel single entry series as well. Another link dropping in chat for you guys. Devin, working the multitasking producer there. We much appreciate him staying up late for us tonight. Get $5 off your first month of RG Premium. Check out that link. Your Core 4 Premium at Roto-Grinders. Get $5 off if you use that link. All right, this is the main course. There's a lot of appealing games in this slate, but Seattle and Arizona, Rebar, open this one up. This one is super, super exciting. We should expect a very fast pace, especially the way Arizona plays. As far as the total, as far as the favorite, we have 56 is the total in this game. High and tight once again. Seattle, 3-point favorite in Arizona. This should be a not just fun from DFS, but just a fun game to watch for football people. We're excited, right?
Yeah, big division matchup, you know, good two quarterbacks that are, you know, started the year really hot, at least from a fantasy stance. And it's two teams that have been, you know, really good at scoring touchdowns, and especially in the red zone. I mean, this is the number one and two teams in red zone success rate in the NFL. And we've even seen last week, I mean, against the Cowboys, you know, Cliff kept his foot on the gas. And, you know, they're going for fourth downs in the red zone. They want to score touchdowns. And that was something he didn't do last year as a head coach. So we love to see him kind of learn from his errors as a rookie head coach. And they're about scoring touchdowns this season. And anytime they need a play in short yardage, they are just going to Kyler and his legs anytime that they need like a short yardage play. And he's been so great. And it's really cool, like, to watch like the difference of Kyler rushing versus like a guy like Lamar, who's just like, you know, Lamar is just, you know, a different kind of breed of like a runner. You know, he's a runner like that we've never seen at the quarterback position. But Kyler is just like this, you know, this little jitterbug. Like, he doesn't like really shed tackles. He's but like, it seems like no one can catch him. Like, he does like this little high step and like no one touches him. It's crazy. Like, he outran Jalen Smith on a play on that Monday night game. And it's just wild. And I love how he just always gives himself up and people freak out. You know, he does like a little baseball slide. But Kyler from a passing stance has just been kind of, and we've been talking about this for about 2 years running. He just hasn't been like he hasn't hit as a passer the way we want. And he's 17th at the position in passing points per game, 14.6, even against the Cowboys. He was 9 of 24 passing in that game, complete 38% of his passes against the Cowboys. But the rushing continues to get him there.
Two plays. Was like two plays, like 150 yards or something like that, or 140 yards? You think there's
He connected. He connected on the long ball, and that's what we're going to need to have happen here again, because Seattle's 30th in defending the deep ball, throws over 15 yards to further downfield. Kyler is 29th in the NFL, completing 11 of 36 of those passes, 31%. He did hit the one for us last week. But that's where Seattle's beat. They get beat over the top. And inversely, Arizona's number one on those throws, and Russell Wilson is the best quarterback on deep throws. He leads the league with 8 passing touchdowns on those throws. So it's a kind of a great yin and yang kind of matchup to kind of see here, because, you know, Arizona is good against the deep ball and Russ is awesome. Kyler has not been great, and that's where you want to beat Seattle. But this is going to be a game that kind of, I feel like these quarterbacks could be like deciding, like, if this could be what gets it right between this and then maybe the Packers, and, you know, between Rodgers and Watson. The right kind of stack that you build around this game's you. I mean, the way Kyler's playing, the play might just be to play Kyler with the Seattle receivers.
Well, he's basically a running back, kind of, sort of, somewhat. He's got what, 6 or 7 rushing touchdowns this year. You know, so he's making it work. I think he's in the top. I was looking at the leaders today, and that's kind of, you know, kind of like you know, every single a week or two where I kind of look and see who the leaders in the league and what's kind of jumping out to me. It's like sort of weird. Jameson Crowder is like the third, averaging the third most like receiving yards per game. Which, like, wow, that's interesting. Just a random stat for you. I'm sure you guys know this. But yeah, Murray's got what? He's in the top five as far as rushing touchdowns this year. But like you said, he's not been particularly accurate. But Seattle is yielding so many fantasy points, and we're not, this is kind of tied to receivers. Daigle, I'm pulling up here DraftKings specific as far as teams, how many points they yield to receivers. And I understand this stuff is noisy to some degree, but Seattle has yielded 59.9 fantasy points per week to receivers. The team that is second worst, Minnesota, is yielding 47, 12 more fantasy points than the second worst team as far as receiving, yielding DK points to receivers collectively. I guess we have to like Hopkins. Yes.
I mean, only Washington and the Bills have targeted their wide receivers at a higher rate than the Cardinals and Kyler Murray. They don't use the tight end whatsoever. They use one running back, not Kenyon Drake. And so where else do they go? Of course, it is only Hopkins, Kirk to a lesser extent, although the past 2 weeks it's been more involved. And then Andy Isabella has become Christian Kirk, essentially, ever since Kirk came back from injury. And they are finally starting to use Kirk more, a 17% target share since he has returned. But yeah, that's where we're going. Also, Seattle's defense has allowed the fourth most rushing fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks, which, and that's why it makes it very hard to get off Kyler in this spot. And although, like, of course you would want to stack him with DeAndre, yeah, like, since we know he's going to use his legs, it almost makes sense to roster him naked and then run it back with Seattle receiver, and then go to the other games to get exposure as well. Again, a really tough slate, man, because we want to play everyone.
Metcalf or Lockett, do you have a preference, Rebar?
I mean, DK is like my siren song. Like, he's like a dying breed of the big, you know, physical wide receiver. Those are the guys that I love. Not a lot of those guys are coming in the league anymore. The game has kind of changed. We haven't had a surplus of those guys. We got basically him and AJ Brown, who were on the same college team, amazingly, and that team was bad. I don't know how that was possible, but Jordan Te'amu, please explain yourself. But DK has now found the end zone in 7 of his past 10 games going into last season. He's just being used more creatively last year. He's just really coming alive. There's just not a lot of guys built like him. But if you look at I hinted upon about Arizona being good against the deep ball so far this year, if you look at the receivers that have done well against the Cardinals so far, it is these kind of guys that do operate in the interior, do get a lot of like more higher efficient targets, even though Russell Wilson, all his targets are efficient. Terry McLaurin, Jameson Crowder, Robbie Anderson, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, all those guys had 7 or more catches against Arizona. That kind of would kind of be more of a signal to like a Tyler Lockett, who does also get deep targets too, but you know, he's running in the slot 60% of the time as well and getting some efficient targets. And Lockett was a guy who started the year on fire. He had 8 or more targets in his first 3 games. It was the first time in his career he had ever had 8 or more targets in 3 straight games. And then he's just done nothing since. You know, he's 9 targets the last 2 times he played. Kind of gone away. But we've done this with Lockett before, though. He goes through these stretches where he'll get 4 targets. He'll get 3 targets. And then kind of come back. And when he does hit, he tends to hit in a big way, like we've seen against Dallas. Or if you go back to last year when, like, he had that huge game against the Bucs and, you know, kind of float his line. So a lot of people have been let down by Lockett. I would assume that Metcalf's going to be more popular. So maybe that's just the leverage pull. And then if you look at the kind of receivers that have had success against Arizona, it would signal that Lockett would fit that mold. So maybe it's a week to kind of go back to Lockett of the two. I mean, I don't think either one of them are bad plays though. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. And what's cool about Seattle is we don't really have to worry about anyone else. Like, David Moore might catch a random touchdown, but it's not like he's going to come out and get 8 targets.
So I'm going to blow your mind here. Again, this is Wednesday night. This is optimal lineups and everything changes. It'll flow throughout the week. But again, through 100, I ran 190 lineups on DK, optimal lineups. Lockett landed in 64%. DK Metcalf in 4%. And Hopkins in 2%. Just, you know, it's kind of weird, right? I mean, obviously things will change to some degree, but that's just weird that's what we're popping out here.
I could see myself going Lockett over DK in this scenario, especially knowing the ownership that DK will come in with after a season high 36% target share, 37% in the last game before the bye. Having said that, it just hurts even more than just losing in your lineups whenever the other one goes off, because they go off in such big ways. Like I had DK against the Cowboys, and just watching Lockett pile on the points, it just hurts your heart, man.
So Carson can ruin our fun. Nobody wants to play Carson. He seems like a really, really strong leverage play here. And then, you know, we have Drake on the other side at 4.8K. You know, he obviously broke out. He broke out on national TV, you know, padded to some degree by the fact he's facing Dallas, and also by the fact he busted up with a 69-yarder and, you know, in garbage time where nobody's even playing at that point. That should have been Edmonds, but, you know, that's all right. I'm not too bitter or angry about that, so we'll move forward. What are we doing as far as these running backs? Anybody have any strong takes? That Drake price is, you know, pretty appealing at 4.8. I don't know how good Drake is, but if opportunity in volume is what matters the most as opposed to talent. I know it's a whole argument people like to have in DFS. Just I want the guy that's on the field more than anything else. I don't care how talented your guy is. He's not in the field. Doesn't matter. Daigle, what do you have for me? Thoughts as far as these running backs?
Kenyon Drake has been on the field, and that hasn't changed once yet. I know we keep hoping it does, and I understand Chase Edmonds has been the better player outside of the one final carry that Drake had last week. But Drake still handled 77% of the team's backfield touches. Chase Edmonds handled a season – or matched his – he had 5 touches in one game. He's had 6 touches in 2 other games, including the Cowboys game. So, like, his role really hasn't increased at all. He's still just the – not even the 1B back. He is the reserve getting sprinkled in. So if you want the player on the field, it would be Drake. However, I still wouldn't want to play him, especially off a game like that against Dallas, who had basically laid down at that point.
Rebar?
Yeah, pretty similar. It's tough to fall in love with either of these guys. More easier, I guess, for Carson, just because I think, you know, subjectively he's the better player. But you look at Carson, I mean, he's kind of living off these touchdowns too. He's just 22nd among all running backs in touches per game. He's 19th in yardage per game, but he's got a lot of touchdown equity, which has kind of floated him. So, I mean, he is a pivot for touchdowns, but he's not a guy too that it typically is going to get you to like a 30. The touchdowns are going to kind of get you to more like the 20s, unless you get multiple touchdowns in the game. So, I mean, it's one of those spots. I think it's really hard, especially when you look at the running backs that are available on the slate to kind of say, I mean, unless you're building a game block here, I think it's really hard to want to really play either of these guys because we're going to try to mix and match the passing games in kind of a Rubik's Cube way where we try to cover our bases in different types of stacks and while keeping, you know, our ownership percentages in line where we want them, but trying to cross-reference this game the proper ways and make sure we cover our bases depending on who could go off here. So I think it's really hard outside of game blocks. And like I said, if you could even get – I mean, all these guys are expensive too. So, yeah. I mean Drake isn't. But, like, everyone in this game is expensive. So it is also a hard game block to also want to try to build just because everyone is expensive. You might have to do just small stacks around other games instead of block this one, because I don't know how you do it without having to go to Kirk or Isabella as a flyer or anyone else. I don't know who else we could even consider. And Greg Olson, probably not.
And in terms of Carson, remember, like, Carlos Hyde should be back after the bye, and he got 7 touches in the first 2 games, total, or 7 touches in both games whenever he was healthy with Chris Carson. So that's kind of a little bit of worry as well.
Going to be talking about some of our favorite players position by position in just a second that we've not talked about in these games. Before we do that, I want to remind you that autumn is in the air and Manscaped is here to ensure you don't carve your pumpkins when you're grooming. By pumpkins, ooh, we actually mean, yeah, we mean your boys. That's what we're talking about. Manscaped is on a mission to change the way you approach caring for your balls. And great news, they just released their products in the UK, Canada, and Australia. Australia, if you guys are watching us there, say hello. I don't know how if we stretch out to Canada. Well, Canada probably, yes. UK, Australia, not really sure. I got to say, I have not used the Manscaped just yet, but I was just earlier today. I was listening to the OG podcast with Noto and Chop and Beer Makers Fan. All 3 of them are users, and all 3 of them were raving about it. Maybe there's a correlation. They're all married and I'm not, but we can move on from that. But they thoroughly enjoyed their products. Let's not forget about it's the best trimmer, not just for one thing, but for your butt, your balls, and your body, all 3. The Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer offers a replaceable ceramic blade with advanced skin-safe technology, which helps reduce grooming accidents That would be brutal. I thankfully have no history of that, but that would be absolutely a disaster. Their new Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer uses the same skin safe technology when you're trimming those delicate nose hairs of yours. The crop care kit includes the crop preserver ball deodorant. That's the specifically they're raving about that for the record. Check out the crop preserver ball deodorant. Everyone knows pumpkin spice lattes and ball deodorant go hand in hand. Also included is the crop cleanser body wash.
Everyone knows that.
What was that?
Everyone knows that pumpkin spice lattes and the cropper go hand in hand. I agree.
Sure. I mean, that's common knowledge.
And I fully support the Manscaped products. I've used them in the past. The only issue is if I tried using it over Silva's toilet, he would do more with a wine bottle than just put it in the fridge. So avoiding that situation. Yes, I agree. Everyone should go get Manscaped.
The crop cleanser body wash. It's a full body wash that you can also use on your hair. So yeah, the crop mop ball wipes. I have no experience, but that sounds intriguing for sure. You never know when an opportunity strikes, as you should always be prepared. Plus, you don't want to stink when you sit around that Thanksgiving dinner. If you suffer, some of us, I'm not going to fess up. I don't think it's me. Some of us suffer from stank foot. I think that's the technical term, or stand on your feet all day. Then I have a product for you. It's called the foot duster. It's a foot deodorant. That's a free gift. I'll be throwing that out as well for you guys. The cooling tea tree oil offers a pleasant experience for the stankiest of feet that allow you to take your shoes off with confidence. The Manscaped Refined Cologne is a cost-effective way to smell clean and fresh for your presumed dates. Look at me. I'm just all over the place. I'm so excited about this product.
This is quite a meal of a read here.
I didn't realize the hygiene market was this impactful. Maybe I'm in the wrong business.
But who wrote this? What poet did they get out of the grave to come to write this?
This is Poe, I believe. The cleanser hair and body wash was designed with aloe vera and sea salt to leave your skin clean, fresh, moisturized, and reinvigorated. It's also worth noting these formulations are all vegan, cruelty-free, dye-free, sulfate-free, and paraben-free, so you know your manhood is in good hands. Now, you guys want this product for sure. Get 20% off, and plus, not just that, free shipping. Go to manscaped.com. Use the code ROTO, that's R-O-T-O. Once again, 20% off, free shipping at Manscaped with code ROTO. Make your balls a priority this fall. With that seamless segue, Rebar. What's
a segment, not a segue.
The chat's having fun with that one too. There's some people in the chat fessing up. They have some stank feet. It's all right, you know, it happens. You know, hit up Manscaped; they'll take care of you guys. Seamless segue to the quarterbacks. Quarterbacks we've not yet discussed. Actually, Dago, I know you want to talk about specifically. I guess this makes sense. The Houston game, because Houston versus Green Bay, that should be a lot of fun. It was hard picking just three games. Start with the quarterbacks there.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers in a tremendous spot, flop lag, as we've talked about with other quarterbacks like Stafford. And everyone is, of course, going to want to play Aaron Jones since the Texans have allowed 25 more fantasy points to opposing running backs, especially after last week to Derrick Henry, than any other team. So that should lead us to want to play the Packers or Devontae Adams through the air. But again, those players are very expensive, and the Seattle-Arizona game is expensive. So it's not really about the matchup, although the matchup is great for both teams. It's more about just game theory with this one. Like, how do we fit this one in? Because this slate is essentially four games, and this is one of them.
Yeah. Your thoughts here, Rebar, as far as the quarterbacks. So any quarterbacks you want, but Aaron Rodgers, who had a rough game last week, well-positioned to go off once again, and as of right now, he's not somebody that lands in quote-unquote optimal lineups. For sure, Watson is landing it at 6.8K on DK, pretty solid price, $200 less than Rodgers. Your thoughts as far as those quarterbacks? And if you want to give a broad thought as far as that game, feel free.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers is kind of, you know, after what happened last week, he's kind of back. We thought he was fully back as like the 2014 version of Aaron Rodgers and younger. But you remember last year, he had a few big games, and they came in just cherry matchups, and now we have to question, is that, you know, still the hang up with Aaron Rodgers? Is he going to be able to to hit for us, and he has tougher matchups. Well, he doesn't have one this week, and he's facing a team that doesn't rush the passer, which will help, especially if David Bakhtiari doesn't play in this game. Houston is 28th in the league in pressure rate. The Packers don't rush the passer at all either, so both sides here should be able to have a lot of fun through the air because they're not going to, neither team generates a ton of pressure. Although Houston does give up a lot of sacks because Watson works himself into a handful of sacks, just the way he tries to extend plays and does some weird things in the pocket sometimes too, a little too much that runs him into some trouble. But yeah, maybe it's a situation that's reversed from week two, when week two everyone wanted to play the Packers passing game and the pivot was Aaron Jones against the Lions. Maybe it's everyone wants to play Aaron Jones and the pivot it will be the passing game this week. We will see. I mean, Aaron Jones has scored a touchdown in 7 consecutive games and 10 of his past 11 games dating back to last year. It's gonna be real hard to move off of him in that matchup. So we'll see what happens. I mean, we've talked about so many quarterbacks already that are in good spots that in the last 2 weeks, Josh Allen has played so bad, but Josh Allen is in a tremendous spot again against a team that has kind of objectively quit on playing football this year in the New York Jets. I even thought that the spread would be higher. Maybe it gets there too. I mean, I think right now there's I'm trying to think what the amount of points I would not lay against the New York Jets right now. They haven't covered in any game. They haven't come close. The Denver game was the closest they came. And that was against Brett Ripien, who gave them like 14 points at the end of the game. But Josh Allen, but get circling back here. I digress. Josh Allen, good spot. He had 21 passing points in week one against this Jets defense while adding 57 rushing yards. He's been down the last 2 weeks, but I still do believe that the Bills, functionality wise, understand like how to play good offense, pre-snap motion, using play action, throwing on first downs, using a lot of 10 personnel. All those things still exist. Josh Allen just hasn't particularly played well, and we can give him a semi hall pass for the, you know, playing in the rain, you know, last week or whatever, as much as you want to give him. I'm at least going to make it as much narrative as I can to talk myself back into playing him this week, because it's a good matchup for Josh Allen, and Stephon Diggs is in a good spot. The Jets are the worst team in defending the deep ball. Josh Allen has completed 63% of his deep passes. That's third in the league. Stephon Diggs has caught 10 of his 12 deep targets this season. Seems like a really easy stack to just go back to. That's been really good for us, you know, all year outside of last week. And Diggs still got in the box.
Especially because you already mentioned it, Dean, like Jameson Crowder is the only guy continuing to support himself in the Jets offense. So it's the easiest run back, because that is the concern here. Although I love, like, he's the first quarterback I wrote down because – like, it takes the Jets perhaps sticking around. Yes, the Bills, the first 4 games, they had a 63% pass rate in neutral game script, whereas these past 2 games, it has dropped to 47%, but they played tougher offenses. They were trying to keep Derrick Henry, Tannehill, Patrick Mahomes off the field, so that makes sense that it was their game plan. And so perhaps they still throw more if it gets out of hand, but I think we do need a little bit of juice for the Jets here. And if Darnold comes back, and we know he loves Jameson Crowder, like, that's the one player you run back any Bills stack with.
Yeah, that's kind of the push-pull of, like, you want a good matchup, but sometimes the matchup is almost, like, too good because the Jets don't have enough oomph to keep up. And maybe you're going to get, like, 2.5, 3/4 out of Allen, like, throwing the ball, and that might be enough. But also, it's not like it's baked into the price that you might only get 3/4. He's the second most expensive quarterback. But, like we've seen, he's got a great ceiling. He's got legs as well, too, if the Jets can somehow, you know, stay in this game. And, like, I don't feel comfortable, like, saying the Jets are going to stay within 13 or 14, whatever that number is.
And that's the difference between, like, him and Aaron Rodgers. Like, Josh Allen has the rushing juice. Rodgers is the 5th highest priced quarterback on DraftKings and offers nothing with his legs. So, of course, Josh Allen can match Russ and Kyler and all these other guys.
He offers the McKringleberry, though, the key and peel. Is that worth any fantasy points? It should be. That was amazing.
I thought that was another Manscaped product.
It was frustrating to see how many people, like, didn't get the reference either. You know, people.
Troy Aikman, Adam Levitan, just. All the olds in my life.
Not Troy Aikman getting anything. That reference, like, minus 10,000 in Vegas. Come on. There was no chance he was going to get that reference.
Yeah. I saw the tweets, though, and I was like, this is disappointing for our society here.
Society.
I was watching it live, and, like, how did you not enjoy that? That was amazing. So much better than discount double check. After that, it was all downhill there for Green Bay.
Oh, yeah.
We kind of mentioned Watson in passing. I mean, I think he's really, really a solid play, well-positioned as far as his price, too. We talked about how he's popping in optimals, too. I can't talk about it. Everybody obviously got to move on the running backs. Unless anybody else wants to sell a quarterback, we can talk about some RBs.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. You could start us off there. What do you have for us?
Well, you hit upon Aaron Jones. We've got what, a Kareem Hunt in a fantastic spot, you know. He's got what, 23 touches, and then he had only had 15 touches last week in that tough Steelers game. He got a little nicked up at the end of that game. But those two teams that he faced, the Colts and the Steelers, are second and fifth in yards per carry allowed to backfields. He's getting a Bengals team that is 29th, 5.2 yards per carry. They lost DJ Reader. Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins sat out today after talking about they weren't happy with their roles and just didn't practice for personal reasons. So I don't know what's going on there. They are allowing 16 rushing points per game to backfields. It's 21st in the league. The last time these two teams played, which is the prime time, the Browns ran for 210 yards and three touchdowns in that game. Hunt had 100 yards himself. The Bengals are allowing explosive runs at a second highest rate in the league behind the Texans. So Hunt's price really hasn't skyrocketed because he's had two tougher matchups in his games, you know, playing in the wake of, you know, Nick Chubb's injury. So I still think he has a lot more upside than he's shown the past 2 weeks. And then listen, I'm going to keep playing Antonio Gibson to the point I can say I was early, even though I'm still really late because I just keep trying to get this through in tournaments. But we saw it with Kenyon Drake last week. We saw it with the Cowboys all year. 20.6 rushing points per game they're allowing. They're allowing 4.9 yards per carry to opposing backfields. The receiving role is starting to get a little bit going, even though McKissick is still playing in third downs and in catch-up mode. But maybe this is a game Washington can just hang around a little bit on the scoreboard because Dallas is coming in with, if Zach Martin doesn't play this game, this is the worst offensive line of football, and at least Washington has a good defensive front. Like, there could be at least a neutral game script for Washington here, a team that has not had a lot of neutral game script. So I'm just going to keep trotting Antonio Gibson out there and trying to see if I can catch an early run for one big game.
Gibson good also because Terry McLaurin is going to be the highest owned roster on this wide receiver. On
So, yeah, we'll talk about him in a second. And you're right. Hunt, by the way, specifically on FanDuel. Again, I ran the same amount of optimals there. 96% of the optimals on FanDuel. He's got a really good price of 7.1K.
He's like 7-1, right?
Yeah, he looks like a really, really strong play there.
Rich said he thinks Hunt's ceiling is like hasn't been tapped yet. I know Hunt's ceiling hasn't been tapped yet because he cramped in the fourth quarter of that first game he got in place of Chubb, and then he got an ankle injury in the fourth quarter of this past one. But he was at practice today. He's healthy. And so all he needs to do is just stick around in the fourth quarter, and suddenly he's handling 75 to 80% of backfield touches as one of the league leaders at that position. So yeah, I mean, this is finally a great matchup now. So I love Kareem Hunt.
So let's talk about Gibson, because again, this is a guy that's not been on the field. So, like, you know, week four, he was on the field 44% of the snaps and 56% last week, downgraded to 37%. And everybody's going to want to play Gibson. He's the shinier new toy. And there's JD McKissick, who he's on the field more, at least he was last week. This could flip flop. In theory, Gibson's the running back of the future. I think they trust McKissick more in pass protection. He's also a guy that's been out there, like you said, in catch up mode sometimes. It seems like a really interesting leverage play to play McKissick if nobody's going to play McKissick versus Gibson. And Gibson's popping right now in optimals. He's the guy, you know, he's cheap enough in the matchup against Dallas, of course. But, you know, Daigle, can we say he's going to be on the field more than 40% of the time? Does he have to be because it's Dallas? Maybe he can get there and just, like you said, one or two explosive plays, you're good to go.
Perhaps, but I will be fully honest with everyone. Even if the model told me McKissick over Gibson, there's no way that finger is hitting McKissick over Gibson. So.
Well, what if I told you ten times less ownership? What would that change things? I'm making that a mirage.
I may just not play a DFS that day. There's no way.
McKissick is like fine for like what you need to just like get by
season long.
You know, when you're trying to fit, maybe if you're trying to fit all these expensive pieces, but Gibson's not expensive himself because he's still getting the goal line carries. Mm-hmm. You know, McKissick's getting all the cleanup duties and the passing down work, but he's not stiffing goal line carries yet. And that's we need him to get in the box. We want guys that at least can say, hey, if they run into a big game, but can you score multiple touchdowns? Can you get a touchdown? And I don't think McKissick can get there. I think he's more of a floor, you know, hit your value guy to open up your roster, which I have no pushback if that's your goal in using him. He's not getting the goal line carries.
Speaking of goal line carries, this guy gets everything, assuming he's not dinged. I think he was, you know, he might have been held out of practice today, or is limited, and he kept using out of the game last week. But Joe Mixon is one of those guys that people just don't like, but I'm fairly certain he's leading the league in opportunities. You guys can correct me on that. And that's the most important thing. I don't care how good you are. If you're getting a pile of opportunities, I'll take my chances. Even an injury, you know, riddled day, he had, 18 touches, 18 opportunities last week. Before that, we've seen multiple games of over 30. And he's still got a really reasonable price on DK at 6.3K. Rebar, are we in on Mixon, assuming he's healthy?
I don't think he is. I mean, he didn't practice today. Zach Taylor offered us no information on how healthy he was or if he is healthy. He was clearly banged up in that game. Just from a visual stance watching that he was banged up at the end of that game. He kind of came back. I don't know if he made it worse or not. The Browns are really good against the run. They did all 100 yards to James Conner in that game. They got blitzkrieged. But I mean, it's tough for me, man. I just think it's such a mismatch, this defensive line versus this Bengals offensive line. And he was good from a fantasy stance because he had 4 catches for 40 yards in these teams played, although he ran 16 times for 46 yards when they played. I just think it's such an overwhelming mismatch, this Browns defensive line versus the Bengals offensive front. I understand holding your nose and playing the touches, but there are a lot of touches I can buy this week.
Yeah. Daigle, your thoughts on Mixon? And I also want to bring, if like Mostert is out, how do we feel about McKinnon? Is this a McKinnon week potentially?
So on Mixon, I'm actually leaning towards that we get Bernard. So that's why I don't know anything about that. I mean, it really does sound bad, or it looked bad, and then it has not been good, at least through Wednesday so far, for Mixon. So we should look to plug in Bernard perhaps
4 or 5
games. But for the 49ers are interesting because it's a lot to unpack here. So Jarrett McKinnon had a career high 92% of the snaps in that game in week 4. And since that time, he's averaged 3 yards per touch. And the 49ers have continued running with the hot hand. Jamichael Hasty was the hot hand last week, but that was when Jeff Wilson suffered a calf injury. So like, if Wilson's healthy and McKinnon's healthy and Hasty's available, which I think all three would be, I would imagine Wilson is still used quite a bit over Hasty because they had the option to use Hasty. They didn't call him up on the practice squad until they absolutely had to, until injuries. So yeah, like I don't trust the Hasty situation at all. If I picked one, it would be McKinnon, but I don't think I'm going to use either personally. Having said that, I also like other running backs, Justin Jackson, because last 4 games, Jaguars, even with CJ Henderson and Miles Jack, are just getting destroyed. Minus 60 point differential the past month. And Justin Jackson came back and was used like Austin Eckler. 20 touches to Josh Kelly's 12 and 6 targets to Kelly's 1 in that game before the bye. So we know that they will probably build a big lead, and Jackson could help do that, plus get the garbage time carries. I also am hoping Le'Veon Bell is active, because if he is, I am smashing CEH in every lineup I have, because Bell likely will not be used that much in his first game. And CEH, I think his worst case scenario is week 1, where Darrell Williams got 9 touches, but CEH still handled around 73% of the backfield's touches with a bit of work inside the 10-yard line. So I would love to play CEH on reduced ownership.
Yeah, I don't think
Could you imagine if this slate adds Gio Bernard too? Like, that's the last thing this slate needs.
That opens up Seattle and Arizona to be more affordable. It'll make that Seattle Arizona game much more affordable, you know, if you want to play.
Yeah, but see, that's the thought everyone will then have. And so Gio will come in like over 80% owned. So then we have to do the next step and think about fading Gio to build an alternative lineup. This is the DFS life. It's going to give you a headache by tomorrow.
So, are you worried at all about the – because we didn't mention Herbert and how good he's played. Are you worried at all that this is the game that sets up just for them to run it 35 times?
Well, I mean, that's why we would play Justin Jackson, right?
No, I mean, just in general, just a general thought. Like, because, you know, Herbert is a guy that's obviously he's ranked in everyone's top 10 this week. He's been awesome. He's living in kind of an unsustainable fashion because his team puts him in the worst spots that he keeps overcoming. But I think it's interesting. Josh Kelly, I think, is interesting too, because his role in the offense, the Josh Kelly role, was never going to be good against the Buccaneers or Saints. Like, it just wasn't. And now he's going to a team, like you said, against the Jaguars, where his role could have a little more leeway. He still came in inside the 5 in that Saints game too. So I'm curious to see if, you know, how many people have jumped off of the Josh Kelly bridge and see him have a positive game too, you know, coming out of the bye.
And like against this defense, I even initially had Herbert in my pool with Keenan Allen, assuming he gets back healthy, since he did lead the league in target share until he went down. But again, against this defense, now there are rumors Minshew might get benched if he performs bad in game. It's like, I can't imagine a scenario where Jacksonville scores 17 points. And so like, that gets me away from Herbert in that passing game.
Can I ask a non-DFS question? I'm curious. I asked this on Twitter last week, and maybe I was being prisoner of the moment or hyperbolic, whatever. Herbert looks just fantastic through, like, what, 4 games, whatever it is. As an asset, how many quarterbacks can you definitively say you'd rather have for the next 5 years than Herbert? What's the number? Like six?
Oh, I thought you were going to say the rookie class. I was like, none.
Oh, no. I'm talking about everybody. And like, consider the next 5 years, and forget about contracts. I'm just talking about, you know, just having them on the field.
I got to look up quarterbacks in the
list. I don't know if I'm quite there yet, as exciting as it's been, to say five guys just for 5 years. Because, I mean, I've got 5 years of Russ left.
He's one.
You know, definitely have Kyler, Mahomes, Lamar.
Dak.
Dak.
We can definitively say Dak? Definitively?
I can.
Yeah. I hope he recovers. But, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I can. Deshaun. I definitely do not believe Justin Herbert is better than Dak Prescott right now.
I'm
not going to give you that camp either, though. No. Dak is great.
We're getting thin, though. Josh Allen.
We take over Tua,
we didn't even
talk
about Watson. Yeah, Watson.
Of course, Watson, yeah. It may be the Josh Allen line. Like, I think I'd still take Josh Allen right now over Herbert the next 5 years, but that's an argument to be had.
Yeah, fair enough. Well,
I think that's about where we're getting to the line. We're starting to get in the weeds here, but I have a lot of Anthony Lynn takes in the chamber because he's not doing Justin Herbert any favors.
I've been super impressed by him. I don't watch a lot of college football, so I didn't have any sort of bias coming in. But all right, this is the question I have. This is a great, like, do running backs matter and do defenses matter? Because Derrick Henry, and also recency bias went absolutely nuts last week. If you wanted to win some money last week, you had to have some Derrick Henry. Pittsburgh has allowed the least amount of fantasy points all season long to running backs, on DK specifically. They have, you know, clearly have one of the better defenses, and there's Derrick Henry, who, you know, is an absolute monster. Doesn't catch the ball. Doesn't matter sometimes. If you're going to break off 90-yard touchdowns, you don't need to catch the ball. I don't think people are going to play Henry. That's just kind of the way the slate is at right now, at least on Wednesday night. Are we bullish? Are we bearish as far as Henry this week? Who's got to take?
I am bearish against Henry this week. So I have a bias that really doesn't allow me to play players when they're good the next week. So let's start there. But also, I just think the matchup is awful. And what's funny is I love this total. I like it over because Vegas is pricing it as if these are two defensive teams, and they are not. Like, these are two offensive teams, in my opinion. So I like the Titans, and I like the over quite a bit. But I think this is more of a Tannehill game, since they will send the pressure, and Tannehill has been spotless under pressure and averaging over 10. He's averaging 10.5 yards per attempt from play action. I don't think it's a Derrick Henry game personally.
Rebar?
No, I'm not playing Derrick Henry.
I think everybody's going to say that this week. And also Zeke, I guess you can mention him in passing, but that line is just so brutal, right? And it's so weird to see Dallas in a team total, a game total of like 46, which is just odd. I mean
did you see Andy Dalton Monday night?
I mean, look, he didn't look great, but he wasn't going to want to help. And Gallup dropped the touchdown. There was a pass interference that should have been called it. But yeah, he wasn't spectacular. He was not as good as Dak. And
I would play Dak, Zeke before Henry.
Say it again.
I would play Zeke still. You know, if he's going to – anytime Zeke is going to be potentially low-owned, I'm interested. I would go to him over Derrick Henry.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think both those guys are going to be kind of sort of lost, and that Dallas line is hurting. But, like, Zeke, I think, was targeted, what, 10 or 11 times last game, and I know he was
all season.
Yeah. he's been great. One of the top backs, from running and a receiving perspective. We got to move on talking about receivers. Oh, go ahead. What do you have?
For Zeke, though, I was going to say quickly, like, that's the game plan. They don't have a choice. That's like, they are literally running the Cardinals horizontal raid. They took the card and now they're carrying it through the rest of the season because the offensive line is in shambles, and they don't have anything else to do but to throw the ball to running backs very quickly.
So I think this can sort of shape the slate depending on how things go forward, but Deontay Johnson is 4.2K on DK, assuming you get four quarters out of Deontay Johnson, which is something you can't assume, but assuming he does. And, like, you know, the rise of Claypool, and then, like, Juju, who knows what's going on. Daigle, you had a great tweet today regarding that. Feel free to speak on that. But, and, like, Deontay Johnson at 4.2K, we have to, like, he's got to be in the mix, right?
I think he's in the mix. I mean, we still have those 2 weeks we're hanging our hats on, where he had a 31% target share. And I do like spinning everyone's injury biases back in their face in DFS. Like, I don't care. I'll take the L if it gets me a player at low ownership. I don't know if he fits in my builds personally just yet, but I like him a lot. Sure.
All right. Yeah, 4.2K. I don't know if we're going to get the same amount of usage again, but that just seems so cheap for me.
I mean, you're the one, though, who wanted to talk about Terry McLaurin. Like, do you want to
Well, yeah, he's just like, you got to play him, right? Like, how do you not play Terry McLaurin, especially on DK? He's, you know, he's the most popular guy popping up in every single optimal. He's got the nut matchup there against Dallas, and for whatever reason, his price is not fully adjusted. And he's had some tough matchups, and he's been okay in tough matchups. He's been fine in tough matchups. And I know his quarterback is Kyle Allen, which is not ideal necessarily, but at 5.8K on DK, and, you know, he's 12 targets last week, 7, 14 before that. It just seems like that price is wrong, especially when you bake in the fact you're facing Dallas and they're just completely horrific. And again, I understand it's not one of these totals that have like 57, 56, or even in the 50s, but he's the offense there in Washington, the main pass receiver, unless Thomas catches his, you know, 3-yard touchdown, whatever it is. Daigle, McLaurin, that's like a, that's one of the first pieces you put in your cash game. At least that's my thought process.
Totally. I agree. I don't know about tournaments just yet, but absolutely in cash games. And then, of course, you also have Dalton Schultz there. Like, Dalton Schultz is also safe because he's running these shallow routes now when they have to get the ball out quickly. 5 targets from Andy Dalton, and I would imagine he continues as one of the few safe receiving options in that offense for the rest of the year.
Rebar, I'm sure you have some receivers in the chamber. Do you have anything to say negative about McLaurin? I assume you're on board. If not, feel free to fire away. But anybody else as far as receivers, or who do you have for us?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, how could you not be? Just the amount of usage he gets, matchup lines up. Hard to get away from. I think DJ Shark is interesting in this game to, as a run back. The Chargers have they have allowed at least 5 receptions to wide receiver one options in A.J. Green, Tyreek Hill, Robbie Anderson, Mike Evans, Emmanuel Sanders. Shark had 9 for 80 in this matchup a year ago. I think he's kind of interesting. He's coming off 14 targets. Tim Patrick is interesting, but his price, he kind of is still slipping through the radar for the usage he's getting. He is smoking Jerry Jeudy in opportunity the last few weeks. Last 2 weeks, he has 15 targets to 8 to Jerry Jeudy. He has 294 air yards to 143 for Jeudy, and he's got 10 catches. He's converted the targets actually for 10 for 214, whereas Jerry Jeudy has just 4 catches for 93 yards.
And he's running he's running different routes than Jeudy. Like, I still can't believe the Broncos game plan last week to just come out and just launch the ball into space every single drop.
That's Drew Lock, baby. Listen, Drew Lock is playing one game. Drew Lock's playing one game, and that's what he's doing, man. And
it's a lot of
Patrick's are, I mean, he's not completing those passes, but he's fired him.
He's got a big hit on Patrick. Yeah, I think it was like 17.5 or something like that. It was a big number. I was looking at that one before the show.
They were like Albert O. They were throwing him out there 20 yards deep, and Drew Lock was still just launching into the ether balls to him. Like, it was a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, man. Drew Lock's got one. He's here for one thing, man. One thing only.
So they're talking about, the coach talked about the potential of Minshew getting benched for what it's worth. And I don't, again, this is sort of narrative street. If you want to walk there, Rebar, I'm not sure if you caught this. You mentioned Shark, and I wouldn't say Shark kind of threw him under the bus, but he basically said like that Minshew kind of sucks. Like, he's not like he's not putting us in the position. Like, I can't really exact. I don't want to the context, get it out of context, but Shark kind of sort of implied that Minshew was not making it happen. It's like, the plays were the right plays and we ran the right routes and we were open and we couldn't get the job done. Well, if those are all true, who are we blaming?
Let's DJ Shark. Let me tell you what, bud. If you think Mike Glennon is going to start getting you the rock,
yeah, or Jake Luton,
you just wait for what you asked for, man.
Yeah.
We didn't mention Davante Adams. We mentioned Rodgers, but Davante, you know, I expect he's going to be fine, right? We don't care about last week. He's going to be okay. And he seems like a great play this week. Assuming you can fit him in, we're good.
Yeah. Still 10 targets, still just as good. I mean, that game, just my God, again, a guy with the Packers stack watching that game. It was awful. The Bucs defense threw all sorts of exotic blitzes and coverages at them. And boy, the Packers had zero answer on any play.
Any other receivers that are worth the head nod, or shall we talk about a couple tight ends? I know those aren't exactly a lot of fun, but at least we have two of the best in the league on the main slate. Can anybody break the tie as far as their favorite tight end this week? Is it Kelsey or is it Kittle? Anybody?
Rich?
I mean, are we thinking Kittle's going to get the Belichickian underlord attention?
Yes.
I mean, I would love to see this. With all of us knowing it as novices, Kyle Shanahan has to know that. So let's see what Kyle Shanahan – do you think Kyle Shanahan can say, hey, man, I know Bill wants to take Kittle away. Do you think that Shanahan is, you know, kind of – kind of a little bit of shade of saying, like, internally saying, I'm good enough to scheme Kittle to get some stuff still, like, as a chess match. I want to go that narrative street.
Challenge accepted. Unless, like, Ayuk all of a sudden gets loose or something like that. Maybe they're not paying attention to him. But, oh, man, is that the least interesting game on the slate? That might be, right?
The Patriots are an objectively miserable team to watch play football. They ruin football. Like, none of their games are fun. The Seattle game was fun. That was it. And the rest of these games have been hot garbage.
Mm-hmm. If John Neuer doesn't play, do we have any interest in Firkser? I know he was good last week, but I don't know if I trust that going forward. If we don't have salary for tight end, give me a cheapie or two, Daigle, that you think can kind of sort of pop.
I already mentioned Dalton Schultz. I think he hangs around in this offense. I wrote a space for season long talk. I'm going to do it anyways, though. I wrote a sell high column a couple weeks back before this slate of games, and CeeDee Lamb was on there because I was worried about him and Amari Cooper in particular sticking around in this offense. And through one game, it looks like an issue for them in this offense, whereas Dalton Schultz, in my opinion, is still safe underneath. Austin Hooper is interesting because his opportunity and target share just continues to grow every single week. Beckham, as Rich tweeted out earlier this week, will never reach 100 yards again. Jarvis Landry has just become a 5-target, 4-catch guy with no ceiling in this offense, whereas Austin Hooper is, emerging, and perhaps he's even more involved now that David Njoku is back to his trade requesting days. So those are kind of the cheapies I'm on. Last week I was on Burton over Irv Smith. I would just say, wherever the chalk goes, go the other way. It's tight end. Never play chalk at tight end.
I don't know how to pronounce this dude's name on Denver. He did have some opportunity. Did
pretty well.
Albert O. Yeah, there you go. That's how you pronounce it. That's
our boy.
Yeah, I know he didn't have a ton of routes, but he made the best of them. And if Fant doesn't play, he's 2.5K on DK. But you mentioned Hooper, and Hooper's a guy that's kind of popping right now in the optimals on DK. He's landing in 76% of them, just because, like you said, the price is cheap enough and he's getting up opportunities. Beckham had an interesting quote today. I won't focus on that part of it, but I will say he did mention casually that he's dealing with a turf toe, like a turf toe injury. Just kind of threw it out there.
It's always something, man.
He said he wants to play through it, but
I would love the play you're not going to do that I would love to do is Chris Herndon. But again, like Chris Herndon is, they're just not even using him properly, but it is a really good spot. But I'm just going to play Crowder, so don't forget I said that.
Yeah, I mean, he's 3K. Good Lord. But like, they're just not letting him – like catch up, they're not throwing balls to him, which is that's kind of a problem. You get no points for pancakes, right? So, what do you have, Rebar? Any tight ends that like I'm missing, or it's just it is what it is, and we're throwing darts if you know the money for Kelsey?
No. Yeah, you guys pretty much covered anything that we'd probably potentially be kind of really wanting to entertain here.
Yeah, I want Hunter Henry. How about him? Does he do anything for anybody? Hunter Henry, kind of an off the board.
He's probably going to be the highest owned on the slate, right?
Okay, well, I don't know. And again, it's hard to say because, like, if Mixon is out and all of a sudden Bernard's opens things up and now you have salary to spend on a guy like Henry, as opposed to if it's tighter, if, like, there's no cheapies that all of a sudden are going to elevate as far as touches because of injury, and we don't know this stuff on Wednesday. This not on the slate, but I saw Oakland was dealing with a potential breakout with one of their offensive linemen. I saw somebody mention Waller in the chat. What's up, chat? Feel free to like and subscribe. We do appreciate that. That's how we keep pumping out the free content here. Speaking of that, we went way over time. I apologize for keeping you guys long. I apologize to Devin as well, but I feel like we got some good information out to the people. Before we step aside, tell them where they can find you. Of course, everybody is following you guys on Twitter, but in the off chance somebody is not, where can they find you on Twitter? What is your Twitter handle? Where can they find your content? Daigle, you go first.
At not J Daigle, because at John Daigle was already taken, so screw the system. And you can find me at the Roto World Football Podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, please, and then rotoworld.com.
Rebar?
Sharp Football Analysis. You can find me at Pre-Snap Motion podcast with Chad Scott, Sharp Angles podcast with Dan Pasuda and Cleve TA. And you can find me here every Wednesday at 9, so lock it in.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, boys. It's going to be an awesome week. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of plays we talked about. There's even some we didn't mention because you just can't mention everybody, and that's not even helpful anyway. Just say, you can play anybody. Well, I guess you can, but depending on ownership and things like that, if you're MMing. That said, we're going to step aside. We're going to get out of here. This was the Pick 6 Show. That was Rebar. That was Daigle. I was Dean. Thanks for Devin to produce the show. This was football. You guys are not aware. Like, subscribe. Check us out on Sundays as well, starting 9 o'clock in the morning. We're out of here. Holler. Thank you.